Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, Internet world. Welcome to The Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble, and I want to thank you once again for taking time out of your very busy life to join me this morning on the broadcast. Today is Thursday, January 7th, 2020. I have to be honest with you, I am literally exhausted from yesterday. Yesterday was one of the most intense, chaotic days I have seen in a long time. And I have some things I want to say about yesterday. I have some things I want to comment on, and I'm going to do that if I have time toward the end of the broadcast. But the main focus on the broadcast today is remembering Ukraine Flight 752. It was a year ago today and part of the day tomorrow that the Iranian government shot down a civilian airliner that had just taken off from Tehran. The context was it was just a week earlier when President Trump a missile strike killing Qassem Soleimani in Baghdad, of course, the terrorist general, one of the top generals. Of the IRGC, and they vowed revenge. To this day, they still vow revenge. It was a week later when they claimed that they were responding to what they thought were missile attacks from Americans lobbing missiles toward them from Baghdad. And then they made the statement that this was all a mistake. The problem is that it's not so easily resolved, because we know, and all of us know, and all of my Iranian friends know, what a liar the Iranian regime is, the Islamic Republic of Iran. So this morning, I want to spend some time in dedication to the Iranian Canadians, most of them are Iranian Canadians, that were killed and their lives were tragically ended by this terrorist government. From my book, Shout Freedom, The Desperate Cry of Iranians, I want to read one of the stories to you about this in the publication, Ukrainian Flight 752, Deadly Game of Deception. Mojtaba Abashandaz leaned back in his seat, trying to relax. He was extremely anxious to return home to Canada after a nervous holiday in Tehran. The last few days had been filled with turmoil. Iran's top general had been assassinated, and there had been a national funeral. The government was outraged that President Trump and Mojtaba feared a swift retaliation. Dawn was breaking over the horizon, and moments before takeoff, Mojtaba logged onto his Twitter account to send a message to his family, quote, I predicted that the war would start right before my flight. Should anything happen, forgive me for my good and bad tweets. Mojtaba did not realize at the time how absolutely accurate his prediction was. The successful PhD student from Toronto had just posted his final tweet minutes later after takeoff. Two missiles struck Ukrainian Flight 752 and ended the lives of 176 people. The Iranian government had just been humiliated before the watching world by the United States when a deadly drone missile attack killed their top general on January 3rd in Baghdad. Now, on January 8th, hours after the funeral, they refused to remain silent with grief. They launched a surprise missile attack into Iraq, determined to strike back against American troops. Most of the missiles imploded and failed to reach their targets without inflicting any casualties. However, there were two missiles that unintentionally struck their target. Only it wasn't against Americans, but instead against Iranians. Immediately, the deadly game of deception began. It was a game that Iran was very good at. They had been successfully playing this game of deception for more than 41 years in the torture and execution of its own people. The official response to the media was that Ukrainian Flight 752 had experienced some kind of mechanical malfunction. It was a terrible tragedy, and the government joined the victims and the families in mourning their deaths. However, within a few hours, a video surfaced on the internet that clearly showed that two missiles were involved in bringing down the airline. The video showed the horror of the plane exploding in midair, and then seconds later, fiery debris began cascading down toward the ground. International outrage from the world community demanded an answer. With their backs up against the wall, was forced to admit that they had fired two missiles, believing that the United States were retaliating after their missile attack. The missiles had unfortunately struck an innocent target. An incompetent, reckless, and murderous government had once again lied to its people. In a desperate retaliation for the death of their general, the regime instead brought more death and anguish upon innocent Iranians. Just a few months earlier, they had deliberately gunned down peaceful protesters in a mass murder spree that in the end claimed the lives of 1,500 people. Now, 176 innocent lives could be added to the list. 82 Iranian Canadians, some of them recently married and beginning a new life, were now among the victims in a fiery mass of rubble, their dreams shattered by a corrupt and incompetent government. Hamad Ismailian, author and dentist living in Richmond Hill, Ontario, made one of the most difficult phone calls of his life. He called the school and told them that Riera, his 9-year-old daughter, would be absent forever. Both his wife and daughter had tragically perished in the plane crash, and now he was alone trying to pick up the pieces of his life. Struggling to cope with his painful loss, Hamed posted a video on Twitter of Riera displaying her musical talent by playing the piano at a recent recital. Riera was not only a gifted pianist, but also a gifted athlete, a wonderful soccer player, and a brilliant student who was proficient in three languages, English, French, and Farsi. Now Hamid must take the most painful trip of his life by traveling to Tehran to identify the remains of his loved ones. Outraged protesters once again took to the streets, demanding that the government be held accountable for the senseless deaths of 176 innocent people. A city square, which is nicknamed Freedom Square, was overflowing with angry and bitter Iranians. 41 years of lies, deception, and murder had pushed Iranians to the edge of the cliff. The foundations of this evil regime is filled with cracks, revealing a government in chaos and confusion that is ready to implode. The angry and desperate shouts of freedom reverberating throughout the cities of Iran are now being heard all over the world. The media can no longer remain silent to the Iranian cause. They must tell their story so that justice and democracy can once again replace the cracked and evil foundation of this oppressive regime of mullahs. From my book, Shout Freedom, The Desperate Cry of Iranians, available in paperback and Kindle on Amazon. 1 year later, grieving husband demands answers from Iran as anniversary of plane crash nears. Nearly 1 year after a Ukraine International Airline passenger plane was shot down by the Iranian government, killing all 176 people on board, the Edmonton husband of one of the victims says family members are still waiting for answers. Elnaz Nabiyi, a PhD student in the University of Alberta's business program, was one of the 138 victims on board flight PS752 with ties to Canada when it came down on January 8, 2020. Her husband, Yavad Soleimani, has become a voice for family members left behind. "It's been a terribly difficult year," he said. "One thing can actually kind of give the families of victims some relief, and that is truth, knowing the truth. But unfortunately, over the past year," Soleimani says, "the Iranian regime did not cooperate with the international community to conduct an impartial and credible investigation, so it made it very hard for us." In the days after flight PS752 crashed, Iran denied its military was responsible for downing the plane. However, amid mounting evidence from Western intelligence, it eventually admitted, well, okay, its military had mistakenly fired at the jet during a period of heightened tensions between Iran and the United States. On December 30th, Iranian state television reported that the government would give a payout to crash victims' families of $150,000, U.S.-type money, for each victim. Soleimani said that compensation is secondary. He would rather know the truth of who exactly was responsible for the downing of this flight and see them punished accordingly. He says, "I think the Iranian regime is trying to use the compensation to stop the families of victims, to close the case, to just give compensation without satisfying families of victims in terms of truth and in terms of justice." He's absolutely right. In June, family members of those in the flight formed the Association of Families of Flight PS752 of Victims, which is pushing the Canadian government to pursue justice in court in a setting such as the United Nations International Court of Justice. Soleimani, who is active in the Family Association, said he hopes to see the Iranian government brought to justice in 2021, but he doesn't know if it will happen. This is a grieving family man, a husband who lost his wife, grieving for what happened last year. My Iranian friends deserve answers. Do you know how painful it is to lose someone that you love, especially in a fiery crash like that, and not know exactly why? And now they're being bought off and paid for, according to the government. That means that they're no longer entitled to answers? Yes, they are. They are entitled to the truth. But as I read from my book and read from this article, I want us to remember the victims' families today. Keep them in your thoughts and prayers as they go through a year of hell and now have to remember it a year later. These are my friends. These are the people that I'm a voice for. And right now, all they want is answers. All they want is closure. All they want is to peacefully put this away for a while. They'll never be the same, but to at least have compensation in knowing the truth. Please keep these victims' families in your thoughts and in your prayers. How many of you are fans of The Crown? It's on Netflix. The Crown is an interesting series. Becky and I just started watching it about, I guess, about a month ago. And it's the story of the royal family, Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip, the Duke of Edinburgh, and their lives and how complex things can be, how snooty the royal family can be, life, death, weddings, you name it, it's all there. It's all part of history. But just this past Monday, there was an episode of The Crown that actually, in so many ways, was the catalyst for my sermon today, for my Bible study. Yeah, that's right. Now, they touch on religion a little bit once in a while in The Crown. It's mostly about interacting, members of the family wanting to get married, and The Crown says, no, it's not suitable to have that mate. So it's complex, but this past Monday was really one of the strongest episodes of The Crown. It shows Prince Philip, and the year is 1969. The month is July. Americans are going to the moon. Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, and they're headed to the moon, and Prince Philip is just riveted to the TV. Now, Prince Philip is a flyer. He's a pilot, so he can kind of relate to them. But you'll notice in this episode, if you watch it, that he is obsessed with them. He can't take his eyes off the screen for a minute. All of the business of the Crown is so irrelevant right now. He is putting these astronauts on a pedestal. He just worships the ground they walk on because of their great achievement. So he follows the broadcast, and then there's the pivotal moment. I think it's July 29th or 26th, 1969. The date escapes me. When they finally land on the moon, and of course, Neil Armstrong's famous quote, it's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. You see him walking on the moon, and Prince Philip is just in awe of them. Well, wouldn't you know, they are going to be invited into Buckingham Palace. They're on a world tour. So Prince Philip is like, wow, I just got to know what they felt like when they walked in the moon. Now, in the meantime, there's a new parish priest. And he, you know, Prince Philip is just really like, religion, I have no need for it. I mean, I'm a big fan of science. Look at what science has accomplished. What has religion done for anyone? And he has just buried his mother. So he's kind of grieving because of that. And this new parish priest is there. I think he's a clergyman. And they form a group of clergymen in one of the houses that's property of the Crown. And the point of this clergy is to get all priests together in this little setting, those that have been burnt out, those that are having doubts, and they form this little group of helping each other. Well, they invite Prince Philip, but he, you know, he's a big deal. And he goes there and says, you know what? Here's the problem. You all are mourning about your midlife crisis. You're facing problems. He said, you need to be men of action like the astronauts. Get out and do something right with your life. And he walks out. Well, it was just a few days later that the astronauts show up at Buckingham Palace. Well, Prince Philip says, look, I have to have a personal meeting with them. You can't just let them come in here. We shake hands. I want to talk to these guys. Well, he gets 15 minutes to speak with Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong. They sit down, and he's just riveted to them. He is just in awe of who they are. And he wants to know how they felt. Well, I think it was Buzz Aldrin that said, well, you know, it was great, but we were so busy. We had to keep our mind on the next thing we had to do in order to be successful and to be safe on our mission. So we really didn't have a whole lot of time to take everything in. And then he asked them for their feelings. They all, you know, had a hard time responding to his questions. So the meeting is over. And Prince Philip has just hit rock bottom. He's so disappointed. Here are these men that he thought were like gods, and he couldn't wait to talk to them. And he was still proud of their accomplishments, but he was so disappointed in them as human beings. He didn't have this awe experience when he met them like he thought he would. And so his idol disappointed him. Ending scene of the episode is Prince Philip coming to the clergymen in this little convent setting. And he says, you know, I met with the astronauts, and I have to be honest with you. I just thought they were the greatest human beings in the world, and now I'm disappointed. I was thinking of having this great experience. They're my idols, and they kind of let me down. He says, you know, I lost my mom recently, and before she died, she looked at me. She said, there's something that's not right with you, son, not right with you. Where is your faith? And he had to confess to his mother, I don't have one. And then Prince Philip said to the clergymen who were gathered around him in a circle, he said, you know, I'm going to be honest with you. I've reached that part in my life, it's like a midlife crisis, where I'm absolutely empty. I'm at rock bottom. I know I haven't been very kind to you. I know I've been very belligerent and critical of you. But he said, I'm here because I want help. I've reached the end. And in the next scene, you see these clergymen and Prince Philip taking a walk outside. And no doubt, they are sharing with him the very thing that he needed the most, and that is the gospel of Jesus Christ. I was just blown away by that episode. And I was reminded by the great theologian Augustine, who in his book Confessions made a profound statement. He said, our hearts are restless until they can find rest in you. And it reminded me also of what Jesus said in John chapter 6, verse 35. Jesus said to his disciples, I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never be hungry again. Whoever believes in me will never be thirsty. And Jesus is saying, I am everything that you're looking for. I am the treasure you're seeking for. He's speaking spiritually here for. When you come to me, I will satisfy your longing, your craving. You'll never be spiritually hungry again. You'll never be spiritually thirsty again because I am the bread of life. Prince Philip found out that when his idols betrayed him, when his idols disappointed him, that there was nothing but emptiness and despair, with nothing or no one to satisfy him. But you can see in this episode, he comes to his senses. Why? Because the Spirit of God is convicting him. It's touching his heart. It's saying, I am all you need. What did Jesus mean when he said, I am the bread of life? Well, you know, bread is considered a staple food. It's a basic dietary item. A person can survive a long time on only bread and water. Bread is such a basic food. It becomes synonymous for food in general. You know, you hear the phrase breaking bread together, sharing a meal with someone. Well, bread was also a part of the Jewish Passover meal. The Jews were to eat unleavened bread during the Passover feast, and then for 7 days following as a celebration of the Exodus from Egypt. Finally, when the Jews were wandering in the desert for 40 years, God rained down bread from heaven, manna, to sustain them. And that's what we see here in John chapter 6. And Jesus is saying to them, I'm that manna that God gave your forefathers in the desert. In the context there, the crowds are following Jesus because of the miracles. And at some time, Jesus inquires of Philip, how you're going to feed this crowd, Philip? And Philip's answer displays his little faith. He said, I don't have enough money. So Andrew brings to Jesus a boy who had 5 small loaves of bread and 2 fish. With that amount, Jesus miraculously fed the 5,000 with lots of room to spare. In this statement where Jesus says, I am the bread of life, he's equating himself with bread. He is saying, essentially, I am everything you need for life. But he's not referring to the physical. He's referring to the spiritual, eternal life. He's trying to get his followers to think in the spiritual aspects of that. He is contrasting what he brings as their Messiah with the bread he miraculously created the day before. You know, that's the physical bread that perishes, but his spiritual bread brings eternal life. And in doing this, I am the bread of life, Jesus is making a claim to deity. There are many statements of I am in John's gospel. I am is the covenant name for God, revealed to Moses at the burning bush in Exodus 3:14. And this phrase, I am, speaks of self-sufficiency. It's the attribute of God. It's also a phrase the Jews who were listening would have automatically understood as a claim to deity. So Jesus is giving us, you and me, an invitation to place our faith in him as Messiah, as Son of God. And when we put our faith in him, we believe that he is who he says he is, that he will do what he says he will do, and that he is the only one who can do that. And the words I'm thinking of hunger and thirst, where Jesus says, I will satisfy your hunger and thirst, he's again talking in spiritual terms. Jesus, teaching on the Sermon on the Mount, said, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. When Jesus says those who come to him will never hunger and thirst, those who believe in him will never thirst, he is saying he will satisfy our hunger and thirst to be made righteous in the sight of God. And so Philip had discovered that when his idols let him down, that Jesus was there to satisfy him. Are you satisfied? Do you feel that longing in your heart that nothing in this world will satisfy? Well, Jesus says, come to me. I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never be hungry again. Whoever believes in me will never be thirsty. I want to take some time right now for us to reflect on a song we all need to calm down and to be at peace. This is Hope Darst and Peace Be Still on the Cross in the Desert. Let's listen.
Still, save the world, and I will. Let faith rise up, oh heart, believe. Let faith rise up in me. Let faith rise up, oh heart, believe. Let faith rise up in me.
Truly beautiful song of worship from Hope Darst, Peace Be Still. I think we can all use a little peace, I think, after yesterday. My thoughts on chaos at the Capitol. Let me make it very, very clear to everyone. I do not in any shape or form condone violence. What happened yesterday with the rush at the Capitol, for those that stole furniture, sat in Nancy Pelosi's office, jumped down into the House chambers, that broke and destroyed property, need to be prosecuted, need to be put in jail. I don't condone that. However, for the media to label this as Trump supporters is absolutely deceitful and false. As everyone who was there noticed, Antifa came in on the busloads disguised as Trump supporters, and they pushed people through the barrier in order to climb the steps to get up into the White House. For the most part, I can only say for the most part, those doing this were not peaceful Trump supporters. And in the midst of this chaos, one proud patriot named Ashley Babbitt, a 14-year veteran of the Air Force, was tragically murdered. And I say murdered because she didn't deserve to die. She was a veteran. Yes, she was a Trump supporter. Should she have been part of the crowd in there? Probably not a good idea. Probably was some bad judgment. But let's get straight on one thing. She was unarmed. When she crawled through the window, she wasn't there to destroy and hurt anyone. She was there to protest a fraudulent election. And she was there as a veteran who has served us, who has protected our freedoms for 14 years. She was there exercising her right to protect our freedoms in what she thought was a fraudulent election. And she was gunned down. It's very sad and tragic. It reminds me, and my Iranian friends know this, it reminds me of Neda Soltan peacefully protesting the 2009 presidential election results in Tehran, and she was gunned down by the Basiji and killed. And this is very sad and extremely tragic. That's one thing. I was thinking of what to say next, and someone beat me to it. Article on the Gateway Pundit, Jim Hoft, here in St. Louis, an excellent political website. And the name of the author of this article is Larry Johnson. And the title of the article is "We Ain't Going to Submit and We Won't Forget." What he said in this article basically sums up my feelings and thoughts exactly. Here's what Larry says, and I want you to listen carefully. I want you to think about what this patriot is saying. After 4 years of a sustained coup attempt to destroy the presidency of Donald Trump, the Washington establishment now wants us, that's you and me, the deplorables, to sit down, shut up, and accept a steal. Here's a newsflash. We will not. This is no longer about ensuring that Donald Trump, who won the election, remains as president. The issue is more profound. It is the preservation of our republic and a demand for genuine accountability and fairness. As I listen to the howls of outrage by a plethora of Democrat, Republican, media, Silicon Valley, tech giants, condemning any Trump supporter who dares to speak out to challenge the election fraud of November 3rd, I have not forgotten and will not forget their lies and their silence. When Black Lives Matter and Antifa ravaged some of our major cities over the last 9 months, these Democratic clowns did not denounce the rioting, the looting, the violence. They lied. They actually called it peaceful protests. But the silent majority saw with their own eyes the desecration of statues, the assaults on law-abiding citizens, the destruction of small businesses. When disgruntled Democrats and Hollywood elite insisted Trump is not our president, the media did not denounce them as insurrectionists. When Madonna called for blowing up the White House, the only outrage came from Trump supporters. That was it. The rest of the establishment, well, they yawned and celebrated. A low-rent, untalented comedian displayed a decapitated model of Donald Trump. The media again shrugged this off as nothing of importance. The double standard, the gargantuan hypocrisy is stunning. And the Washington establishment expects us to act as Alzheimer patients who can't remember what we had for practice. No, no, no. We remember every act of resistance for more than 4 years. We were fed the damnable lie that the Russians elected Donald Trump. Now we know that the FBI lied repeatedly in submitting false applications to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. So far, not one of those liars, Comey, McCabe, Strzok, has been called to account. Yet, supporters of Trump, General Michael Flynn, and Roger Stone were accused falsely of lying and prosecuted. Most true Americans recognize this as a flagrant violation of the basic concept of fairness and blind justice. We are told to move along. Nothing to see here, yet we have witnessed the metaphorical exploding of bombs, crashing of cars, and know beyond doubt that there is overwhelming evidence of election fraud. Plenty to see if only one opens their eyes. We have seen the videos of ballots and suitcases being pulled from hidden stashes and run through Dominion voting machines. We have seen live footage of those machines communicating via Wi-Fi with China. We have read the affidavit of witnesses who hauled 400,000 filled-in ballots from Bethpage, New York, to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. These are not conspiracy theories. These are pieces of tangible evidence. We have watched angry leftists burn American flags and have endured the lectures about the rights of those scum to express themselves. No arrests. Yet, the police turned out in force to arrest the African-American leader of the Proud Boys for burning a Black Lives Matter banner. What the hell? One set of rules for those who want to destroy America and another set for patriots who want to defend this nation. I want you to know what we should do. We should continue to resist. First, Joe Biden is not our president. He is a corrupt thief. Second, if you are a registered Republican, change your registration to independent. Third, do not send a single dime to any Republican who refused to stand with President Trump. Fourth, contact your senator and representative and let them know you will not forget. Fifth, continue to protest and speak out. Do not be cowed or bullied. I really want to thank this great writer, Larry Johnson, the Gateway Pundit, who summed up in so many words what all of us surely are feeling right now. That's on the political side, and that's important. But I don't want you to also forget the injustice done to my Iranian friends. They need to know the truth. We need to know more about this downed Ukrainian flight. It's not going to bring back the victims, but they need closure. They need your voice. They need your prayers. And also today on the broadcast, we have learned with everything in the world we try to fill our lives with, to bring contentment, to bring peace, to bring purpose, they all fail. The idols don't help us. There's only one person that can and is willing to help us, and that is Jesus. He indeed is the bread of life. He is all that we need. He is everything, our treasure, our salvation, our hope, our forgiveness, our future. Jesus is everything that we need. In the midst of all of this political chaos, and we have a right to stand up for truth, but don't forget, political arguments will come and go. Political leaders will rise up and fail us, but Jesus will never fail us. He is Lord. He is God. And I hope today that like Prince Philip did when he came to the end of himself, that you too, if you've come to that point in your life of where everything does not satisfy you and you're feeling hopeless and despair, remember the words of Jesus. I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never be hungry again. Whoever believes in me will never be thirsty. Thank you so much, my Facebook friends, my listeners. God bless you. I will see you again on Monday on the cross in the desert. Have a great weekend.